genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock, or you can hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is potpourri. Each of my guests will discuss a very interesting topic, no two of which are related. My first guest is a professor at Johns Hopkins University with extensive background in writing and advising on warfare. We'll reveal how conflict along 200 miles of lakes, river, and woodland in North America shaped our country's military values, our practices, and institutions from his book titled Conquered into Liberty. My second guest is a Harvard professor and a conflict resolution expert. She'll explain the essential role that dignity plays in resolving conflict from her book titled Dignity. My third guest is the publisher of the How Now Pocket Pals up in San Rafael, California. She'll regale us with seemingly random yet hilarious tidbits of information. And if you want to join in the conversation or if you want to ask a question, you can always call us at 639-0008. Elliot Cohn is the Robert E. Osgood Professor at Johns Hopkins University, Paul H. Snitz School of Advanced International Studies. That's SAIS for short. For 10 years, he led the SAIS partnership with Syracuse University in providing executive education to general officers and senior Defense Department officials and National Security Studies in a National Security Studies program. Elliot graduated in 1977 from Harvard College. He received his Ph.D. in political science, also from Harvard in 1982. Elliot has been an assistant professor of government at Harvard, an assistant dean at Harvard University, member of the Strategy Department of the United States Naval War College, and on the policy planning staff of the Office of the Secretary of Defense, also a professor of strategic studies at SAIS. He served as a counselor of the State Department, and he was a special responsibility for advising the Secretary on matters pertaining to Iraq, Afghanistan, Iran, Pakistan, Russia, as well as general strategic issues. Elliot is the author of 4 books and the co-author of 5 others. He received the Air Force's decoration for exceptional civilian service for articles that he's written, and in 1982, Elliot was commissioned into the United States Army Reserve. Welcome to the show, Elliot. How are you today?
Very well, thanks. Good to be with you.
Well, thank you for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Your latest book is titled Conquered into Liberty, and it describes what's known as the Great War Path, which is about a 200-mile stretch between Albany, New York, and Montreal, Canada. So how did it get its name? Why is it the Great War Path?
Well, it received its name from Native Americans. This was never really a corridor of commerce, but it was going back to the early 17th century, even beyond. It was the route on which war parties would move back and forth between North and South. And, of course, in North America, that could happen in the winter, too. You could move along the lakes when they were frozen over. And that really remains true through the 17th century, through the 18th century, and even, as I point out in the book, well into the 19th century. This was the main military corridor between what became Canada and what became the United States.
And what made it so strategically significant?
Well, a number of things. It was the most direct route, if you were coming from what's now the United States into Canada, the most direct route into the Canadian heartland. The other way, you'd have to sail up the St. Lawrence. That's very difficult. The winds are in the wrong direction. The navigation is tricky. Coming up the back door, as it were, via Lake Ontario was very difficult, not really all that practicable until the end of the 18th century. And similarly, if you were thinking about going from Canada into the United States, as the British did in 1777, again, the most direct route. One of the things to remember is, for an 18th century army, moving by water is the easiest way to move. It's a lot easier than moving by road.
Absolutely. All right, well, that makes a lot of sense. Now, you've taken this corridor, the Great Warpath, and you sort of renamed it, you've rechristened it the American Warpath. Why so?
Well, the argument of the book is I go through a series of battles to show this, that the American way of war, in many, many respects, really evolves along this corridor. And I try to show that with some very big battles, much smaller battles, but all of which illuminate different facets of how we approach warfare. And one of the points I'm also trying to make to people is, if you want to understand how the United States approaches war and thinks about war, you actually have to go pretty deep into our past, into the colonial past, and into this long-term contest with Canada.
Well, yes, you take umbrage with a politician who said that we had not had any real foreign invaders or foreign conflicts on our soil until 9/11. You took umbrage with that, and you took it all the way back to the 1600s to make your point. My guest is Elliot Cohen, his book, Conquered Into Liberty. So, Elliot, talk to us about how, first of all, there were many warring parties in this corridor, this 200-mile stretch. So lay out the protagonists for us, and then lay out how the warfare in this stretch, this 200-mile stretch, really shaped us for all of our future wars, whether it was the Civil War, the War of 1812, all the way through to the war in Vietnam.
Sure. Well, there are really, you know, I would say three large parties. There are the various peoples who become Americans, obviously the English, but also Dutch and other settlers in what becomes the United States, and of course the British, including the British government. In Canada, you have a French population. You also have the French, who are different from the French Canadians. And then finally, you have different Indian groups, most notably the Iroquois, who are the most formidable of all the Indians, although far from being the only ones. So these are the three really large groupings that you have, and then there are a lot of divisions within them. To explain what is it about that is distinctive about how we approach warfare that emerges along this corridor, let me give you, I guess, two examples. One is the title of the book. The book's called Conquered Into Liberty. That's from a pamphlet that we scattered around Canada before we even declared independence. We had launched an invasion of Canada, the Continental Congress had, and there was this pamphlet addressed to the French Canadians, which begins, "You have been conquered into liberty," which is a very strange idea if one thinks about it, and is very much characteristic of what we did in a way in World War II, in another way what we did in Iraq. And again, this is very much about an invasion along that great war path, that great war path route at the very beginning of the American Revolution. The second example that I would give has to do with our style of warfare, which is extremely pragmatic. And in the book, through giving an account of a number of these battles, I try to show how, on the one hand, the American approach to warfare is sort of European. We use some European forms, some of the European laws of war, some European tactics. But there's also a streak that comes from the frontier, which is year-round fighting. It's improvisational. It's pragmatic. It's ruthless. And that synthesis is very peculiarly American, and other people have noticed it about us. And I think in the book I quote General Erwin Rommel in World War II. This is something, he had fought Americans, he had fought Brits, he fought Frenchmen. That this is something about the Americans, that they can improvise a lot, and they change, and they adapt, and they're pretty relentless. And I would argue this all comes from that experience along the warpath.
Well, it's a strong argument. My guest is Elliot Cohen, but here's my conundrum with the whole thing, Elliot, because we're talking about an area, 200-mile stretch, where there was a lot of guerrilla fighting, there was terrorism, there were these skirmishes, and you say it's year-round battles. So if there was all of this warfare that shaped our American way of fighting, then why does the U.S. military strategy have such difficult times in Vietnam or when there are insurgents in Iraq and places like that where guerrilla warfare is the norm?
Well, very, very good question. I guess I would say a couple of things. One, the fact that we've been this way doesn't guarantee that you're going to win. Though what I would also argue that if you look at Iraq, which I'm very familiar with, including firsthand, what you see is actually a lot of adaptation. In general, I would say we succeeded at some level in Iraq, at least in a more narrowly military technical sense. But I would also say that the American approach to warfare has a number of layers. You know, each war, it's like laying down a layer of sediment. And the experience of the Civil War and World War One and World War Two, they don't obliterate this past by a very long shot. It's still there and it's still very much alive. But that experience of very large-scale conventional conflict, in a way, became more important over time. And one of the ways in which we reacted to Vietnam, in a way, was by turning back to that part of our tradition. And part of what I'm trying to show in the book is actually the tradition is more complicated than you might think.
And that it is. My guest is Elliot Cohen, author of the book Conquered into Liberty, 2 centuries of battles along the great war path that made the American way of war. So, Elliot, in looking at it, you did some great little biographies of protagonists during this time period, but I think no one person exemplifies the heroism and also the betrayal of this region better than Benedict Arnold. So give us your assessment of Benedict Arnold, because you're on record as saying that Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson are bigger traitors to the United States than Benedict Arnold was.
Yeah, that won't be good for sales south of the Mason-Dixon line. But yes, the truth is, particularly for the period that I'm covering, say from 1775 through 1777, when Arnold was very, very much a central figure along the Great War Path, he did extraordinary things, to include delaying a British invasion from a year and then really being responsible for the defeat of a second British invasion in 1777. That is what brought France onto our side in the revolution, probably thereby guaranteeing independence. My question is, well, what exactly did Robert E. Lee or Stonewall Jackson do for the United States that's comparable to that? The portrayal of Arnold, of course, deserves his own biographies, and he's had many. I guess at the end of the day, I tend to view him as a very tragic figure, because he is clearly the most brilliant soldier of the revolution. He conducts guerrilla campaigns, conventional campaigns. He fights a naval battle, which I describe, on Lake Champlain. He builds a fleet out of nothing. And so the eventual story, which I sketch out for people, is as much one of tragedy. It is treason, there's no question about that. But it's tragedy. And what's peculiar is how we've remembered him. Why is he the traitor and, say, Robert E. Lee isn't? And that, again, tells us something about our past and how we've imagined it.
Well, it's a very poignant description that you have in the book, Elliot, no doubt about that. There's some other characters in there. We don't have time to go into all of them, but one of them in particular that intrigues me is Ethan Allen. Long before he was known for furniture, he was actually one of the Green Mountain Boys. Talk to us a little bit about Ethan Allen and his style of fighting and how that's ingrained in our American way of life.
Oh, Ethan Allen is a fantastic figure. He was a real autodidact. He had his own very distinctive views about religion, and he's really, in many ways, the founding father of Vermont. The side of the story that I talk about, though, is the secret negotiations that he conducted with the British in 1780 and 1781 to really bring Vermont under British protection outside the United States of America. And this was a very serious negotiation. He was acting on behalf of the leading figures of Vermont, including the governor. I describe in the book how it's stymied by George Washington, who has this rather interesting offstage role. He gets wind of this, and he delivers a threat almost in the style of a kind of Don Michael Corleone, which is, it's quite subtle, but it gets through to everybody. But by the way, Washington is also, I think, a very interesting character in the book, because among other things, he does in his protege, the Marquis de Lafayette, who wanted to lead a French invasion of Canada, and Washington, without Lafayette ever knowing about it, makes sure that this will never happen. It's quite Machiavellian in some way.
Well, our first president absolutely was a master politician as well as a general. My guest is Elliot Cohen. We're talking about his latest book, Conquered into Liberty. Elliot, I'm going to take you off the path of the book for just a minute here, because there's something topical that comes up that's right in your wheelhouse in terms of military strategy, and that is the recent death of Kim Il-jung in North Korea. Now, that has some people, particularly in South Korea, very worried. What is your assessment, at least at this early stage, of what this might mean, not only for relations between the United States and North Korea, but the rest of the world and North Korea?
Well, North Korea is a surprising place. One of the things I did when I was in the State Department, I was in charge of the State Department side of our reaction to the discovery of a North Korean nuclear reactor in Syria. And the lesson I took away from that is these people are capable of doing very surprising and very dangerous things. So I think we're in a situation of even greater than usual uncertainty. I think the question is whether Kim's son can really establish authority. He's young. He's dealing with very, very tough people. And the unfortunate thing is a lot of what goes on will be opaque. We won't know. And, you know, in a way, there is a connection with the book. One of the things I learned in government that I think I brought to the writing of history is an awareness of how murky the future looks when you're engaged in trying to conduct policy. We forget that when we look back retrospectively and we say, boy, what dummies these people were for not seeing what was right in front of them. People will say exactly the same things about us, but for sure, you know, I know the people in government right now really have no idea what's going to happen in North Korea, and it could be good, it could be chaotic, or it could be very bad.
Only the future will tell. My guest is Elliot Cohen. So, Elliot, back to your book. What do you want readers to take away from reading Conquered into Liberty?
Well, a number of things. I hope they learn something about our history that people are not often not that familiar with. I hope they will think in a perhaps in a deeper way about the connections between our past and our present. What I try to do in each of these chapters, other than telling a good story, is bring things up to the present and show how some of these strands from the past reach into where we are today, and hence conquered into liberty. But I also say in the author's note, I hope that they will be inspired to visit this place and to look for themselves. I walked every piece of ground that I walk, I write about, including I write about a battle on snowshoes. So I went up there at the time of the year when the battle took place, and I snowshoed it. And it's an area that I love. It's a beautiful area. It's a fascinating area. And I hope I'll give people a little bit of a vicarious sense of the past. And so it's nonfiction for sure. But I hope it'll have that kind of grip that a really good novel has of putting you in a place and time very different from your own.
Well, you do a great job of really describing the area that you call the Great War Path, and it's almost like a travelogue in some ways, too. So thank you for that, Elliot. Now, if people are interested, they've been intrigued by what you've had to say, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
Well, obviously, I hope they'd get the book. It's available in all the usual places, and it's available on in an e-book version as well. I have a website, www.elliotacohen.com, ElliotaCohen.com. I've begun putting up a number of things. I'll be putting up more, though, about the Great War Path and adding things that weren't in the book onto a blog that I've posted there, including pictures and things like that.
Oh, Elliot, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming. We'll talk to you down the road.
Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
Thanks. I'll talk to you soon.